Phil Kafkaloudis joins me. He's the author of a beautiful little book called Someone Else's War and joins me. Hello, Phil.
Hey, g'day, Trev. How are you?
Good, very well indeed. Why did you decide to write a story about your grandmother?
Look, I'd heard her stories all my life since I can't actually remember. It's like talking to Paul McCartney and asking him, what's it like not being a Beatle? He wouldn't know. So I don't know what it's like not having a grandmother like this, because I had heard those stories from whenever. So I've always grown up as the kid who had a grandmother who was a spy and an espionage. And, you know, this woman who had a family in Australia. She was Greek, but she had a family in Australia. Ended up in Greece just before the war and ended up being trained by the British SOE, the Special Operations, to be a killer. To be a killer, to be a spy, to do espionage, sabotage, and, you know, hand-to-hand combat, all of that sort of stuff. And rescue people. And she rescued lots of flyers caught in... This is my grandmother,
yeah.
You know. She was only 36 at the time. But yeah, they went for it. I mean, you can understand why they did. She... had grown up in Alexandria in Egypt, which had a big Greek quarter, mm-hmm. and it was a very multicultural society. We think Australia is. Alexandria certainly was, like Shanghai. They had a Greek quarter, a German quarter, a French quarter, a British quarter. And so she could speak half a dozen languages. She had learned how to be an actress, so she had been an actress in her younger days. And she, of course, she could speak English well. And she was a British citizen. You know, she was considered to be British because she was Australian back in the 30s, you know. So they'd jump on her and say, yeah, come on, you're just the sort of person we want. You can understand what the enemy's saying. You can understand German. So so they took her on.
Did she tell the stories, or were they stories that ran through the family and you needed to pry out of her, or did she like to tell stories?
I gather she liked it. I never knew her, of course. But she liked to tell the stories. The family certainly knew the stories. And when I tried to get the stories, I got my aunties together, and they've either passed on now or got dementia. So they don't know any of this anymore, if those who are surviving, my mum and one of my aunties. But when I got them together around a table, one would tell a story like, oh, yes, Olga, who's my grandmother. Olga was in a cafe. She was sitting down and she saw a double agent. This is in Athens. She saw a double agent and she went out, followed the double agent down a laneway and killed the double agent. And I went, what a story. So I'm writing this down and they're giving some details. And then my auntie Tina would say, no, wrong. It wasn't in a cafe. It was in a bakery. And she was with another agent when she saw the double agent, and the other agent went out and followed her into a laneway and killed her. I went, okay, version two. Okay, but still a good story. And then my other auntie would say, you're both wrong. It didn't happen in Athens. It happened in France, you know. So I go, oh, it's killing me, you know. But because I had so many different views of the same story, I was able to get out basically the main point of what they were saying. So there were lots of those sort of stories, but I would love to have had a time to speak to her. But there were times, and it sounds a bit, you know, ooh, but there were times when I was writing this that she was there with me. And
yeah.
I could really feel, if I'd written something that went too far, that'd be almost like I'd feel a slap on the head saying, you know, okay, I shouldn't be writing this. And then other times I'd write it, and then there'd be this huge feeling of well-being, like, yes, you got it, you nailed it, you know.
Is this a complete oral history, or did you do research outside the oral history as well?
I did a lot of... I went to Greece 4 times for this, and I went to the UK to try and find her records. Sadly, there was very little to find, but we had lots of documents. I think that the most... You know, she did a lot of stuff in Greece that's in the book, but there's a lot that she did after the war as well that I found from the documents that where she worked with the Americans. Because after the war, there was this terrible civil war in Greece. It was terrible where, you know, there was Nicholas Gage wrote a book called Eleni about it, where, you know, brother is against brother and sister against sister. And it was terrible, the communists versus the royalists. And she was in Greece at that time working for the Americans. She'd worked for the American ambassador after the war. So there's more to come. But there was all the documents pointed to a whole lot of things. And what the great thing was to go back to Greece and find where she was and where she had been and where she worked and doing all that. And she had a house at one stage that was left to her by an ambassador she was working with, because they all just flee the country as soon as the Nazi invaded. In fact, Trevor, it is 70 years they invaded 70 years ago this month, and in fact in about a week and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm giving a talk at the War Memorial in Sydney on the actual anniversary, 70 years. It's extraordinary. They called it the Forgotten War because no one knows about it, you know. Mm. So I did a lot of research trying to get as much as I possibly could. Yeah.
We'll take some calls with listeners about their grandmothers. And I'm sure we're going to find many ways to link these stories together as we go along this morning. Hello, Velda.
Good morning.
Yes, Velda.
First of all, congratulations on a brilliant program tonight.
It's thank you.
It's wonderful. But I would like to share the story of my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Helena was actually born on board the ship the day before it docked in Fremantle
mm-hmm.
in 1887. And interestingly, the ship was a bit unusual in that it was a West Australian one
mm-hmm.
that carted wool. It was a wool ship and plied between Western Australia and Britain. Grandmother's family were all from Dorset. They'd been farmers for over 200 years.
And Val, did they continue farming when they came?
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, it's still in the line. Is farming or an orchard. Her father actually started an orchard at Bedforddale.
And most of the women of that period would have been very involved in working on the farms.
Oh, very definitely. Grandmother, during the Depression, she had a small farm in the northern area.
Mm-hmm.
Having five children, things were not good during the Depression. She battled through that. Her father, I think, was born with a thistle up his kilt because he couldn't settle to anything. But they went to Coolgardie. And when I was researching some history on Goldfields Town, I discussed how the people had got there, and she said, oh, yes, that's quite true. We walked beside the wagon from Perth to Coolgardie.
You know, this is a testament to the women of that period and the strength of the women of that period. And, Phil, that's something you would have found as you take a look at it too. They were strong women of that era.
They had to be very strong women in those eras, in that era, because you think about how many children were lost, how many, you know, they might have had 10, 12 children, you know, 15 children in some cases, but how many didn't they have, you know, they had to cope with, you know, and we know someone loses a child, a woman loses a child, what an emotional devastation it is. These women had to put up with that. You know, that the medical care was just so. And in fact, one of the moving points in someone else's war about my grandmother is the fact that she did lose a child the child was born, but there was an incident that happened, and that is one of the reasons why she ended up in Greece there. And you think, why was she so tough? And I talked before about the queuing generation. You know, she was the sort of woman who would bust through queues. Once she got back from the war, she was even tougher. And, you know, and Australia was pretty sheepish. A lot of people were, you know, very polite and all that. And she wasn't. She, you know, she had killed people. She had seen the worst of life. She'd had things done to her. And so, you know, when she came back, and my sister tells a story that that when she and Olga were standing in a queue, my sister was going to do some ballet, was going to do a ballet lesson, and there was a whole line of women and their children standing in a queue, and the woman at the front taking the shilling for the lesson was talking to a woman, and everyone was getting restive, but they stood in the queue, and Olga said, oh, to hell with this, and just crashed through the front, slapped the shilling down and went into the lesson, you know, because half the lesson was half over. And that was, you know, very annoying to many people. But, you know, you're tough-minded, and you have to be. And really, it's women, especially in those eras, that carried families.
Would presume when she was in Greece, it was quite secretive.
Mm.
What did the family think was happening when she was away?
Yeah, that's the issue. They thought she was dead. Because she was working underground, she couldn't get anything out, especially after the Germans came in. They thought she was dead. They had a little fish shop in Ultimo, Piemont, in Sydney. Which is still there. I went there with my mum. It's not a fish shop anymore. It's attached to a pub. But we went there and saw what it was like, and she told me the memories. But they thought she was dead. Her husband, my grandfather, remarried, had two more children. And meanwhile, she's alive. She manages to get one of the people she rescued, because she was, one of her primary responsibilities was rescuing flyers, you know, British, New Zealand, Australian airmen out of Greece after the Germans invaded, because the British just had to get out of there quickly. And there were so many people stranded, so many soldiers stranded. So she managed to get one of them, who was coming to Melbourne, to drop by the shop one night, knock on the window and say, I'm from Olga. She's got a message for Nellie, who's my mum. And my mum, who was very nervous at the time, didn't want to know. You know, her father had remarried. She'd had a child of her own by this stage. It was pretty horrific for her. So she just basically sent him away and without finding out what the message was. But that was the big shock. That's when the family realised, uh-oh, you know. And the second wife too, who always had great respect for Olga and never said your mother doesn't exist. She always says, remember your mother and think of your mother. And then when she turned up to be alive, she actually welcomed her strangely.
That's family, and that's a great respect for family as well.
Yeah, and that's the era too. Yeah.
Hello, Mary.
Hi. I don't know that you'll think that my grandmother, she's certainly never done any of those things.
I'm sure she's amazing, Mary.
But my grandmother was the most wonderful, other than my mother, most wonderful grandmother in the world. She used to live in Tassie, and then she went to Flinders Island and married my grandfather. And when she did, all her family would have nothing to do with her. They reckoned my grandfather was a big, bad-tempered Frenchman. And he idolised the ground she walked on. He wouldn't touch a hair of her head. And they was, oh, we loved going there all the time because they used to spoil us so much, because I'm one of nine children with my family. But she used to make her own bread and her own butter and all sorts of stuff like that. She was just, would help anybody. If anybody needs helping, she'd do it. She was wonderful.
Mary, it's one of the things that we associate with grandmothers is that warmth, the home cooking, the being engulfed by a grandmother and the warmth and the security in that. Given the history that we've got here, it doesn't sound like that, but was there a feeling, was there the other side to your grandmother as well?
It's like when she actually came back from the war, I'm giving a little bit of the ending away here, but she did make it. She was arrested by the Germans and thrown in jail and all that, and it didn't look like she was going to make it, but she did. When she got back, she was so different to any of the other grandmothers that were around. But my family, you know, it was interesting hearing Mary say that I've got the best grandmother in the world. And isn't that a fantastic sentiment? To feel, what a great love to feel. The second marriage, the second grandmother, the woman who married my grandfather, was just like that. It was beautiful and encompassing and listened. You know, there was this thing, maybe in society now we don't listen so much to our kids or ask them and want them to talk. You know, it's all advice and telling them stuff and you shall not. But Jean, who was the second wife, was not like that. She was the first person that ever asked me when I was about eight, you know, how are you feeling? You know, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
How many people ask a kid how they're feeling? You know, it's how school and you right, you know, that sort of thing. So she was gorgeous. But Olga, who I wish I'd known, she was going to bring me up, but she died. She died. My mother still says under mysterious circumstances, you know, considering what she did after the war too, then maybe that's true. Maybe we've got another great story here. But she was not like that. She was not the touchy-feely sort of person. Wasn't before the war either. She was quite firm. Do you ever see Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah.
Yeah. Madame Giry. Probably more like Madame Giry, the ballet mistress, the one in black with a cane. That's how I feel that she was. But my mum, when she actually read the book, said, my mum's a Greek mother who usually, you know, if I'd say I'm going on holiday, she'd say, you're going to have a job when you get back? Or, I've got a new job, Mum. Are they giving you more money? You know, there's always like, she's always a downer. But when she read the book before the onset of dementia, she said one thing to him. She said, you nailed her. So I actually got her character right. So the things that I use, the tools that I use to try and, put a character into this book, I think I got it pretty close, according to my mum anyway, which is great.
My guest this morning, Phil Kafkalud, is the author of Someone Else's War, which takes a look at his grandmother's life. Hello, Tosh.
I'm only 25, but when I was in high school and before I finished, I was about 13, 14, and we got sent to go to a nursing home. And being that age, I thought, oh, great, this is going to be interesting. But I've always been interested in war and whatever else like that and what happened. And I met a lady who was in Auschwitz. And all she did was tell us stories and how she survived and how she... I don't know, it was a real eye-opener. When I finished doing that work experience sort of thing, I went back and always took her flowers and used to speak to her and introduced her to my kids. But I've now moved to Sydney now, and I'm not sure what happened to her. But, yeah, no, it was a real eye-opener.
Tosh, how important was it as a person of that age to recognise what people went through in that period of time?
I never really got into it until my sister, who is a bit older than me, took me to see the Anne Frank. They had like a exhibition at the Sydney Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really got into it until I sort of went to the Anne Frank Museum or exhibition that they had at the Sydney Museum.
Yep.
And then I went to War Memorial and just started getting into it myself. But I reckon it's a massive importance for like people my age and younger to really look into it and see how they survived and actually what went on in that time, because it's disgraceful, as everyone would know.
And, Tosh, it isn't just your age. It's my age, and it's people in their 40s, 30s, and 20s that need to know these sorts of stories, Phil.
That's the really interesting thing. Since I've been writing this, I've been looking at people walking down the streets, and you think, you've got a story. You've got a great story there. And how many people have told me, in book signings and whatever, where they say, yeah, my grandmother's got an interesting story, and the story actually really is. And I say, just write it down. Oh, I'm not really a writer. What do you mean you've never written letters or anything? Just write the story down, because that story will be forgotten. If I didn't write this down, no one in my family was going to do it. All my family came to the launches and they all said, thanks for writing it, you know, for putting it down so that we can know something about her. And the story would have died. I mean, what about our great-grandmothers and our great-great-grandmothers? We don't know what happened to them. We don't know where they were from. You know, when you talk to a lot of people who had pioneer families in Australia, what about their parents, the people before they came out from Ireland or from Greece or from China or whatever? What were they? What were their stories, you know? Or take it back 300 years. We don't know anything.
That's, you know, and this is going way off track just a little bit, but that's one of the shames about the loss of extended family, is that those oral traditions of passing stories down from generation to generation, as families move apart so much now, we don't have grandchildren seeing as much as their grandmothers and their aunts and their uncles, because everybody moves all around the place.
Yeah. And just on, and again, going off the track here, just getting photographs of Olga, everybody in my family, we've got a huge extended family, had a photograph, a different photograph, and it just moved on. And at one of the launches, Bob Carr launched it in Sydney, and a man came up to me, just sidled up to me and said, you've written the book about your grandmother. And he went to pull something out. I thought it would be a piece of paper showing me a photo of his mum. It was a photo of my grandmother and her husband on their wedding day.
Wow.
And I didn't have that photo. And I went, what? He said, yes, my wife grew up with your grandmother's mother back then. And, you know, in Greece. I thought, wow, this is amazing. These are people I didn't even know existed. Had no idea about it. But there are people out there.
Wally, hello.
Hello. How are you? Sorry. My mother died a couple of years ago in her sleep, which is the best way to go. But her birth certificate has father unknown, because her mother and my grandmother was a lady of the night. And her story is that in 1926, she went to get married when mum was 5 years old and went to the wedding, and the groom didn't turn up. And so she married the best man. true story.
Yeah.
Back then, there was no sort of 14-day given notice or whatever. This was 1926.
Yeah.
And she was with him for 57 years.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. And her name was Molly, and she came from Ireland in 1895.
Yeah.
Yeah, married the best man, and they were together for 57 years.
Great yarn, Wally.
I've never heard of that before. That's extraordinary. What a great thing. So always, before someone asks you if you're going to be best man and you're single, think about it, dudes. Think about it.
Be a little careful. What was the relationship like between the sisters?
You mean my
yeah.
my grandmother and her sister?
Mm.
She had a sister. Well, see, Olga was adopted, and this is, again, one of the driving forces in the story. She
wow,
didn't know who her
so
parents were.
There are so many different elements in this to the story.
Well, and it was because I had to find out motivation. Why was she in Greece? Why did she do what she wanted to do? And part of the part of it was she lost a child. There was a badly damaged marriage. She did have her children in Australia, but she was adopted. She went back to Greece to find her real family. She received a letter saying, "We are your real family," and she went back, and it was her real family, but simply they had heard that Olga was living in Australia and that she was married to a restaurateur. It wasn't, he owned a fish and chip shop, you know. But still, he used to brag. I know. And so they said, "We are your family, come back." And so she came back and met her sister and her mum, but they basically just wanted money and wanted a new life. And so it was actually very sad, I think, all around there. And her sister was always jealous of her. And so during the war, there was great tension between them. And her sister may have not been a good friend to have in a war. That's all I'll say on that one.
But, okay.
Which is very, very, very sad, I think. Sad for Olga.
And did Olga then stay there, or did she come back to Australia and then go back again?
Well, she went back in 1928 to find the family.
Mm.
And then she came back to Australia, and there were a whole lot of issues. And then she went back to Greece again, and that's when the war broke out, and she was caught there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Monica.
Oh, hi. I'm 83, and my English grandma was born in the 1870s, and her father was a sergeant in the British Army, and he was badly wounded and buried at sea.
Mm-hmm.
So that when she was a little girl, her mum was really destitute, and she kept them alive by doing the English, the Lord of the Manor's washing. And my grandma was so badly fed that she walked on two little sticks to get around, and the lady of the manor bought her cod liver oil and helped to make her better. And she married and had 11 children, one of whom was my father, who emigrated to Australia. And when he went home to fight in the First World War, he brought his mum back to Australia, and that's how I met her. And she was very much part of my life. And some part of her life she shared my bedroom, and we'd lay in the dark, and she'd tell me all these stories about when she was a little girl.
Yeah, important stories to know as well, Monica.
Yeah.
You'll have to write them down.
I will too.
Yeah, do
children.
Write them down. You've got to write them down, and your children are going to love you for doing that, you know. And that was an issue too. Just talking about the history of things, because my grandmother was my grandmother's mother, you know, the adopted mother, was a seamstress and like a proto-feminist kind of thing in Alexandria. The woman who took Olga on, she was a single woman, and she was a seamstress for the Greek royal family. And so I used to travel between Alexandria and Athens. So Olga, and also talking about what sort of character she was, the fact that she mixed with the Greek royal family's kids, you know. So there had to be all these influences in her mind, you know. And you realise as you dig these stories, like so many of the great stories we've heard so far, that you dig a little bit more and you'll see that there are so many tentacles in the stories, you know. Who would have thought? I didn't know any of these things about Olga until I started doing the research and found it out, you know. What a great stories we're hearing.
Did she have relationships? Did she have another family? Do we know anything about her relationship-wise when she was in Greece?
No. She never said anything about anyone she may have had a relationship with. In the story, I surmise that she had a kind of a relationship with someone. But, you know, you're trying to keep alive in a situation you're wanted by the Germans. They know you're out there. They know something about her. And they're trying to catch her, like Nancy Wake, you know, constantly happening. And Nancy Wake writes about how many relationships she had while she was in the, you know, she had a wonderful husband, but he died. And, you know, and so I think it would be presumed that, yeah, there would have been a whole lot of carryings on going on in the war, as you would expect, you know.
Yep.
you could die tomorrow, you know. So, yeah, but I don't know who or where or how.
How much time did she need to spend making friends with her enemy? That, you know, that whole keeping yourself unrecognizable and safe at the same time getting information out and also assisting.
That's the whole thing about espionage, isn't it? There is a passage in there where she befriends a German officer. And what I've tried to do is not make the Germans demonic, the individuals demonic, because they, you know, in many cases they weren't, even though horrible things were done. But many individuals weren't. And she does befriend a German officer who wants something from her. He wants to be seen with this beautiful Greek woman, you know, although he stays a gentleman at all stages. But she manages to get information, and in the end he does help her and help save her, passing on, look, they're after you. You know, they're on to you, so get out, and passes that on to the underground for her, you know. And that was the sort of stuff that did happen, you know, that there were people from the enemy helping you, but at the same time perhaps people in your own family giving you away.
Morning, Don.
Just a few short words. It's 64 years ago since I lost my mother's mother, and I can remember her you know, quite vividly, because I lived my first 6 or 10 years on the farm with her and the rest of the family, or most of them. And I've done some research in the last 10 years, because I had a heart attack and a stroke about 10 years ago, and to learn how to read and write again, I thought I'll start writing my own stories about my family and that. And my grandmother on my mother's side, she had 29 children. the Browns from Pemberton.
Yeah.
And they were down there. Their main business was they had orchards and pigs and supplying food and everything to timber cutters that were cutting the sleepers for the Underground Railway in London.
Did all the children survive?
All of them.
Did she lose any children
as
well?
She had one set of twins, and as far as I know, she didn't lose any children.
Jeez.
That is
remarkable.
That just means that most of Pemberton's related.
Just about, yeah. And my eldest boy, he's... he has the same name as the river down there, the Warren River.
Yeah.
They used to grow millet as well, but when they first went to Pemberton area there, they built a canal from the river around, like a billabong type of thing, and they built a log cabin on there with a log pass, and then they dammed the river up so they could divert the river coming through the house, through the kitchen.
Don, thank you.
Don, one more question for Don, if we can.
Yeah.
Just how old was your grandmother when she had her first child, and how old was she when she had her last one, do you know?
15 to 54.
54?
And my mother was the last of the children, and I'm just over 70.
That's phenomenal. Thank you, Don. 15 to 54. When you've been the last...
You'll be busy.
I'll tell you what, if you're the last one, you'd just be going, look, all right, do what you like. Amazing story. Thank you, Don. Hello, Ben.
Hi there.
Yes, Ben.
My grandmother was in Holland during the war, and she ran a household and a hotel. The interesting thing, though, was that the Germans had occupied the hotel. They were on the ground floor. The family was on the top floor. And there were airmen who were on an escape route out of Holland in one of the cellars.
That's great. I'd love to hear that.
Well, I think what you're sort of saying is inspiring me a lot, because I've been gathering a lot of material, because both sides of the family were sort of involved, you know, in the underground. And a great aunt, in fact, she got the gold medal of freedom from the Yanks and a gold medal for courage under fire or something or other from the Brits. And I actually saw some of the letters that the airmen wrote back, you know, years later, you know, when they got free, and it's fascinating stuff. So but I think...
That is fascinating that people were doing this all over the world. And you think about the bravery of people who were doing this. You
Absolutely.
The locals. You know, and I talk about Olga and what she did, but for every job that she did, every rescue she did, there were 10 Greeks who were laying themselves on the line. And yeah. every time, you know, a German was killed, and the same thing would have happened for, you know, grandmother in Holland, that every time a German was killed, there were 10 Greeks who were lined up and shot, you know?
That's right.
And, you know, it's interesting
what you said before, you know, they weren't all bad. See, I think probably the worst thing that my grandma faced was when my mother was interrogated by an SS officer. And my mother pretended that she couldn't speak German. And so they used a local informer as an interpreter. And he falsified some of the answers. And at one stage, Mother got a bit furious and said a few words in German.
Oops.
let's say not repeatable over the air, but so the German sort of said, "Ach, ich spreche Deutsch," and you do speak German. And now he just did the whole interview over again and let her go. But my grandma had actually already packed a suitcase, because usually once you were interrogated, that was it. Mm-hmm. And it was a lucky thing if you could get a suitcase to people before they were shipped off.
Ben, it sounds like you've got a bit of writing to do.
Well, indeed.
Do it. Just do it. Don't worry about the style. Don't worry about anything. Just put it down. Just do it. You know, even if someone else edits it, you know, in 100 years' time, doesn't matter. Just put it down, whatever you do, you know?
Well, English is my fourth language, but all the same, I do it pretty well, and I've been gathering stuff now for years, and I've got photos, and I've got genealogy, and it's all ready for action. It's just a bit of time on my part.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah, you got time.
Good on you, Ben. is that one of the things with Olga? Who do you trust?
Who do you trust? Absolutely. And it was so... who do you trust? Do you trust your family? Do you trust other people in the network? And there was that. And did they trust her? You know, it's so easy to turn in those situations, you know? Something happens to you. She was arrested. It was so interesting hearing that story about the interrogation, because there is a chapter in the book where that happens to Olga, and I've actually put it down virtually word for word to how it was told to me. It was one of the few times that my aunties all agreed on how it was. And my mum told me the story very theatrically all through my childhood, that she was caught by the Germans. They interrogated her. She, as I said, had been an actress, so she pretended to be just a housewife, a peasant, and pretended, of course, she couldn't speak German. But as they left the room, the interrogators left the room, spoke in German, and said, "Look, we'll ask her if she was seen in the port of Piraeus on the 10th. And if she says she wasn't there, we know she was. We have a photograph that we have her. She's a liar." And so when they came back in, "Were you seen in Piraeus?" She went, "Oh, Piraeus, I don't know. I don't, what when? On the 10th, I don't know. The days, you know, I did washing on the... was it Tuesday? Tuesday? Yes, 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 I was there. I did it, you know." And she played it up big, and they went, "Oh, okay." And they let her go. And she got out of the interrogation. But she also, as I said, about this big sense of herself, she went to the lift. Instead of taking the stairs out of the building, she waited for the lift. She had had this huge success. She'd fooled the Germans, waited for the lift for a couple of minutes, and that was the time when gave them time to change their mind. They came in, they grabbed her and threw her into prison.
Wow.
Because they just didn't let anyone go. But this, you know, because they were so sure she was innocent, they had made that initial decision to let her go. If it was me, I just would have got out of that building. I tell you, idiot.
Run. Noni, we're a little bit away from the news. Tell us your story.
Very quickly, hello, Trevor. And hi. Phil, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What an interesting segment. I'm sitting here and 29 children, goodness me, that other one. Well, my story is my grandmother, when she was 4 years old, had her death certificate written out, and yet she lived till she was 87. They were clearing land and with her brothers, and they lit a fire to burn up all the trees and everything, and she was whipped up in the fire and completely burnt all her clothes to her. They were outside Ballarat. They got the doctor out from Ballarat in his horse and carriage in those days. And he said, "Leave her." He said, "I'll come back in the morning and take her into the, you know, funeral parlours." He said, "She'll only live about an hour." When he came back in the morning and the mother said, "She's still alive," he said, "She can't be." He said, "I've brought her death certificate out." Well, he took her into hospital, and I've got a photo of her when she stood for the first time. She was there. That was at... 8 years old. She was 4 years on her back. They used to put leeches on her every day, you know, sucking out the, sounds terrible, but yeah. Out all the terrible things. And she was the most wonderful woman. I'm trying to be quick.
Yeah, you're okay.
The, her husband was a very sick man. They lived outside Ballarat. She met him and married him. He was a miner, and they got what they called a miner's disease. So they went to Mildura to live. And then in the Depression, she turned the whole of her backyard into the most beautiful vegetable garden. She made all her pickles and jams like women did in the Depression, and the front garden was flowers. Every Sunday, people came around to take flowers to the cemeteries, and she gave away hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of big parcels of fruit and veggies that she had there.
It's that sense of community at that time, which was absolutely amazing. Noni, thank you. We've only got about a minute to go till the news. Phil, after writing the book and after experiencing your grandmother through other people, how did you feel about it by the end of it?
Oh, I felt she was human. I felt she was real. I never knew my grandmother, you know, and it's you think... I actually never had a grandmother except for the second wife in the marriage. And at the end of it, I'm just really privileged. In fact, the last thing I wrote in the book is that I'm glad that through writing this book, we've finally been able to get to know each other. So she's a woman. She did amazing things. She could have just said, no, I'm not going to do any of this. I'm going back to my family. I am, you know, not... But again, she didn't really have a choice there, so which comes out at the end of the book. So... Yeah, she saved a lot of people, and I think that's a pretty wonderful thing in a pretty horrible time.
It is, and it's an amazing story to tell.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for telling us.
My pleasure.
On the program this morning, Phil Kafkaloudis, who's the author of Someone Else's War, which takes a look at the amazing feats of his grandmother.